Fred Film Radio, San Sebastian Film Festival, Spain.
So, good morning. I hope you had all a good night's sleep and that you are really fit to participate to our panel. So, as you can see or understand from my accent, I'm not Michael Gubbins, who unfortunately is kept prisoner in the UK. Brexiters decided that they couldn't come here because he's a convinced European. So I guess that for next year we will have to find a way to have him secretly coming to moderate a workshop. So actually, who I am, I'm Christine Eloy. I'm the head of Europa Distribution, so we co-organize this panel every year with the festival. So I will do my best to chair the panel. Have mercy, I'm not doing that. I'm heading an association normally, so that's not exactly my job. But I think that, on the other hand, I'm very lucky because on this panel, I really have the speakers I wanted to have to discuss this topic. So it should be very easy. And actually, I'm expecting also from you to participate because the idea here, it's not school. So it's not that we are talking and you are just listening. The idea is to have an exchange. So you are extremely welcome to interfere. There is a mic somewhere, not Michael Gubbins, but a mic going around if you want to have a question. And we will, our speakers will do their best to, of course, answer your question. To start, I just wanted to give you a little idea of who is our association. So Europa Distribution is an association that was created by independent distributors 12 years ago, so from everywhere around Europe. So we have, of course, members in Spain, but actually in every country. In the meantime, we have also some members that are outside Europe, that are based outside Europe. From the beginning, the main idea behind the creation of the association was to have a place where we distributors could exchange and learn from each other. And they would do this, and they're still doing it, in the scope of film festival and markets. And actually, San Sebastian is one of the older partners, so it's like our seasonal colleagues, and we really, I'm saying hello to them, we really love to work with them. It's a partnership that works very, very well, and that is, of course, very important because it allows us to actually bring topics that are related to distribution, but make them more open, and make the discussion more open with non-distributors. So that's the thing, is to find a topic that is of interest for distributors, but not only. And of course, today, there is a big, big elephant in the room, and that's actually that the market is collapsing, is very difficult, and so that if you want to create, want to see, exploit your films, you know, not only on the first window, but on the long term, it has become more and more difficult. And of course, that's not okay, and certainly that's not what distributors are meant to do, because their idea is to, you know, to keep the film alive and active and seen on the long term thing. So we are in this moment, where everything is changing for already a long moment, actually. But the idea is not to stay and to sit on your chair and just, you know, lamenting and complaining and saying, "Ooh, the good old times." So there were better times, that's for sure. But the idea here is to just talk to each other, exchange, so that we can see what is already there. What is the market, or it has evolved, so also to have maybe some prognostic of what it could be, so that actually we can get out of the bad moment and create a brighter future. So that's why we named this panel Back to the Future. There is absolutely no relation with the film, so that we can see the future based on the past also, and things like that. And so we have these wonderful speakers around us that will drive us around this topic. So directly at my left, I have Margherita Chitti, who is the distributor on the panel. So she's the distributor for Pullola last century, since more or less the beginning of this one in Italy. Very long experience in distribution, working with the likes of Nanni Moretti and Cicuto, etc. Then next to her, we have Wendy Bernfeld, who is the VOD specialist, also working on rights, VOD rights, TV rights for Fulala, also the beginning of the millennium of the last century.
I'm old.
You're not. You're experienced. So next to her, we have Anke van Dien, who founded Pickle not long ago, actually, with a new way of exploring not only the catalogue, but the new films in the Netherlands. So a partnership between, actually, theatres and VOD platform. Then next to her, we have William Page. So you can see that, actually, we have a very feminine panel. So we have William, so we have some gender equality.
Men are underrepresented today.
Yeah, it's not my fault. I was supposed to be Mike. I tried to have something balanced. That's a Brexiters. So so William has founded the platform FilmDo in the UK, who is exporting essentially, of course, independent films from a little bit all over the world. He's also the secretary of Eurovod, who is an association like a cousin of your distribution, but representing VOD platforms. So he will give us the feedback from a platform, what they also are doing to make these films exist. And then we have Joséphine Létang, who is a cousin. I really like family. You can hear that cousin, blah, blah, everyone is cousin. Joséphine has a project with actually a cousin of Pickle, so the project of Anker. Again, creating a collaboration and a link between theatres and VOD platforms, always in the idea to have the possibility to create a life for films also on the long term. So now you know all of them. We will start the discussion with Margherita Chetti and the point of view on of a distributor in Italy. So I'll leave you.
So first thing first, thank you for organizing this, because I think I have more to learn from this panel than to bring, because that's exactly what we need to work on. It's how to make our catalog work again. I mean, I speak from my experience, obviously, but let's say that when I started to work for a distribution company in Italy at the beginning of the century, it used to be all about home video, pay TV, and free TV revenues. I mean, we had these six figures coming from MG, from pay TV, home video, and free TV. So no matter how the film performed in theater, it wasn't a big problem. I mean, we had very good figures from the second exploitation of rights. And same did go for the library and the catalog. We used to have a constant five figures revenues on our catalog titles every year, no matter which kind of title. And then suddenly it has been for a short window of years, mostly about theatrical, for us, in my experience at least. I mean, there was at some point TV wasn't buying any longer, and it was buying for very, very small figures. And now again, the theatrical is collapsing completely. So it has collapsed in the past year in a very dramatic way. And so for us, it's a matter of survival, and the survival comes from especially the pay and the free TV exploitation again, but with completely different figures. The figure has completely changed, so the money that we used to get from these windows, we can forget about it. I mean, it has been changing completely. So what is changing now for us, it's the model of our distribution. So our distribution model is changing from acquisition on, meaning that if we want to survive, so if you want to have a solid base of catalog and library titles, this is changing my acquisition model. So from the beginning, now I know that I have to buy among the titles I buy per year, which in my case it's 6 to 8 maximum titles. I need to have 2 or 3 titles that I know that will perform as a catalog title for 10, 12 years. And I don't need this title to perform necessarily in theater. And I'm especially talking about American titles with cast. So I don't need this title to perform strongly in theatrical. But then I know for sure that for 10, 12 years, I'm regularly selling it as a library. So this is influencing completely the acquisition model I'm working on. And so the stronger titles in Italy as catalog, for my experience as art house distributor, are those American titles with some cast. That's something that I can resell no matter how they did perform in theater. All the rest, and I'm talking about big, important titles, Cannes Palme d'Or winners or foreign film Oscar winners, they, for the moment, they have a life on the first run. They have a life as a current, but they have a very, very short and poor life afterward. I have a title of more than 70 films, and I succeed in selling, if I'm lucky, a package of 4 to 5 library to pay per year, and 4 to 5 to free every 2-3 years. That's so I have like 40%, even more, 40 to 60% of my catalog that stays there, that remains there. It used to have an exploitation in home video, meaning TVOD and all the VOD platform as well. But now the revenues from the home video has completely collapsed as well. And so the point is that we have a sub-licensee for home video. They don't have any interest in renewing the rights after the first window because they have no exploitation. So what we are trying to build now, it's the possibility to have a direct exploitation with the platform for these titles. But they are not of big interest. I mean, this kind of... So what we need is really... I feel like we are becoming more and more invisible. That's the feeling I have. I mean, like we are vanishing a bit. We don't have any visibility any longer. So what we need to work on is exactly this: to how we can find a way to for our catalog to be visible. So we can even create a platform, but then we have to be sure that people know that this platform exists and they can find our titles there and they have an interest in these titles. So it's a bit complicated. But that's a very interesting point. I mean, I think we all have huge catalogs of amazing titles that are little by little vanishing and not exploited any longer. So after the first window, because I mean I can't complain for the first window. I have to thank Sky, Rai, or the platforms that are still, they keep on buying our films. So I can't complain. But after the first run, after the current, it's less and less. The impact it's less and less important. So we little by little we are going to vanish if we don't find a model to make this work properly for me.
Oh, is it because so that's of course the Italian reality for more independent films. So reality, or is it about the possible visibility of the films but on illegal platforms? So you see that you say that the catalog is vanishing,
yeah.
But is it still present, not legally, or is it really totally vanished?
The catalog, it's totally vanishing, in my experience. I mean, Obviously, we have a strong piracy problem, but I don't think it's much about. Probably some, yeah, we had some problems on some titles on availability of on YouTube, open availability. But I'm talking about bigger titles, maybe Amour, which is a Palme d'Or and Oscar winner, but when you talk about smaller titles, very art house, they are simply disappearing.
We have many distributors in the room, of course, so maybe someone wants to give feedback from their own local experience. It's the moment. There will be plenty of other moments. Ah, voilà, Christian. Yeah, you have the mic coming.
From what did I hear you properly? But because you mentioned especially US films with casts, yeah. Right? So could you give us some examples of films that you were able to exploit in the long run, and as opposed to ones that are not.
I can give you a couple of titles, for example, that I an old title we bought when I was I didn't join the company at the time. It's called Bonneville, and I renewed the rights because I keep on selling it every year, and it was a total disaster at the box office. And 5 years ago, I bought a film called What Maisie Knew, which was completely irrelevant in terms of the box office. And I keep on selling it on pay, on free, as a catalog. And most recently, I bought another American film with Shirley MacLaine called The Last Word, which was quite... unnecessary in terms of theatrical box office, but TV immediately show an interest. And the thing is, with this kind of titles, I can create a package, because then obviously it's all about negotiating, but I can create a package with other titles that by themselves wouldn't be of any interest probably for the TV, but then... So it's like a Trojan horse. I use these titles, a Trojan horse, to bring more. So this to give you an example of three titles that keep on working.
It's not a very good news for European films, what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I'm kidding, but that's a fact. So I know, but that's a fact. For if I want to, the stronger titles in terms of catalog exploitation, European, needs a strong box office. Then they become strong titles in terms of catalog exploitation as well. So Cycling with Molière, for example, I think about my catalog. But European that didn't perform at the box office, vanishing. That's my experience, obviously.
I can actually confirm in a way what you're saying, because the film that we keep selling again and again is Mud, which is an American film, and it's basically that one keeps you know, generating revenues, but it's really an exception, and
I know. I know it's scary. I mean, I'm not saying good things, but I think we have to work on keep on building again a visibility for European films that doesn't necessarily have a cast and doesn't necessarily perform in theater in theatrical. So that's the bigger problem.
Sorry, I'm sure we're going to have plenty of time to discuss this later. But I just wanted to add up something of what Riley Margherita says, that the situation is even more dramatic than that. Because I can testify we had Alabama Moreau, you know, the Broken Circle Breakdown, Oscar nominated. I'm sure everybody knows about the title, one of the best titles, I think, of the. And we were absolutely unable to sell it to free TV. So the only exploitation I had was Sky for 1 year. Can you believe that? And we did more than 100,000 admissions. Same thing happened with the long list of titles I have that bypassed the 100,000 admissions, and Sky doesn't want to buy. And we are absolutely unable to create any sort of package. And at the same time, I really would like to keep our quality of editorial line as it is. So I don't want to create any hybrids with American title we cast and not a good quality at all. So I think the situation nowadays really goes case by case according to the connections you have, at least in my country. You know, the power you have to sell, I mean, many coincidences that are not really market ruled at all. So I think we really usually need something at an institutional level to give some rules, because our market is totally unruled. So we cannot say we need this, we need that, because they keep changing it. Because this year, I mean, I had a fantastic year last year and nothing is sold. So I had the cast, I had the film with Isabelle Huppert, L'Avenir, again, 100,000 admissions, actors of the year, nobody cares. Good title, critics raving. So what do you need to have to sell to these people? Because still nowadays, at least in my country, I don't know. The only thing I know is that I will keep until the very end to select very good films that are being praised by the critics and by the audience. And until when I'm going to collapse with the company, I will keep doing. But I want to change my strategies, my taste, my quality, just to please someone that at the end of the day doesn't really know what they want. Sorry.
No, I see your point very... Actually, we have five people working for the company, so we try to... It's a very delicate balance. I mean, when I bought What Maisie Knew and Last Word, I tried to keep anyway a balance of quality in the acquisition, but I completely see your point. It's no longer possible, at least for us, having five people in an office that has to survive, to just buy what we love, which is what we used to do 10 years ago. Now we cannot do it any longer. We have to be more cautious, and that's it. But I completely see your point. I'm really surprised that the Free TV didn't buy The Broken Circle, but Breakdown, it makes no sense.
Can I ask which country you're from?
She's Italian. Italy.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Just for some of us who don't know. Okay, Italy.
Actually, I'm jumping in on that to say that maybe when the audience is interacting, if you can say indeed from where you are.
I'm Claudio Bodoni from Satin Film.
Satin?
Yes. And before we had Christian Thomas from Imagine, so Italy for Claudia and Benelux in the case of Christian. So just that maybe it can
thanks.
I don't know if maybe the speakers have some comments at this stage already. Go, please.
I would like to address your point that in the beginning there's a lot of attention for a film. It does well in cinemas. There's reviews. People know about it, so therefore there's a demand. I mean, the demand you gave for arthouse films goes like this after the first run, usually. So I just wanted to say that's the reason that we and also Josephine started a collaboration with the cinemas in that first window, just exactly because of that. I mean, you need to hold the attention. You need to create and hold the demand for arthouse films and then reach out as largely as possible. So I think that point you're making, when is there attention? That's in the beginning, and how can you create it later on? I think that's what we're going to discuss. But
keep it going. Point. Yeah.
So speaking of how difficult it is to sell and be bold, because of course, if you want to have a film somewhere, you have this dual relationship. No, there is someone buying, but you don't have anyone. You have someone selling, but the problem is that if you don't have someone buying, then you are in a tricky situation. So this is something that actually, I guess you are advising a lot for a long of time. So you have seen also what Marie-Rita was explaining and was also reinforced by our distributors, is that there is a change in the paradigm anyway. So from your point of view, what is your...
I don't know. I think maybe I'm the black sheep, but I'm actually on your side. I think that what I'm seeing, Right Stuff, is most of the time, 70% of the time, a buyer for platforms around the world. And there's an enormous demand for art house festival and foreign language film now. It's just not always necessarily in a specific country, and some of you are region-specific all rights distributors. So if it's Italy and you only have Sky and Wind and one other platform, that's tricky. But in other countries like France, there can be 5 to 7 buyers in the SVOD window. And I guess maybe I should just back up quickly. Should I speak for a few minutes for context, just to explain? Yeah, so I think the type of VOD that we historically looked at, or you, was pay-per-view, like home video rental, and it came in that category. And it's a revenue share model, so by definition, it's not always a lot of money, but it feeds the rest of the windows, just like theatrical used to feed pay TV and free TV, the exposure, the audience. Now, when SVOD started a few years ago, what was interesting is there may be thousands of platforms theoretically buying, but most of them, I personally, this is my bias, ignore, because if they are on a rev share model, with some exceptions, it doesn't work. You need a flat fee for a subscription VOD license. Non-exclusive, it can be small, but when you can have 5 or 7 SVOD sales, you know, plus the TVOD at the beginning and then the AdVOD buyers, this helps dramatically. Now, what we found is in the past 2 years, in a way, even within SVOD, we talked about it last night, there's two different types. There's the type, like in Italy, where you have a pay TV service like Sky, and then they tie the SVOD to their deal. That's one type of buyer. But the other types are these standalone, thematic, specific ones. Art house, horror, you know, a cinephile, a documentary only. And those tend to buy multi-region. And often they're buying from a country that you're not in. So, for example, Yaddo, which is now called Docsville, it's Nick Fraser's company in ex-BBC Storyville. He now, out of the UK, is buying foreign language, art house, doc, festival, but people in the UK or in Ireland don't always know the name Yaddo or Docsville. So, you know, sometimes the problem is that there are buyers, but either the local people or the consumers don't know about it, but they actually pay flat fees, and many of them also fund originals. You know, Curiosity Stream is in, I don't know, 80 countries, but when we were speaking in Holland, people didn't know they could sell their documentaries to Curiosity Stream. They hadn't heard of it. You know, so these sorts of opportunities have arisen. And the SVOD deals, ironically, the sweet spot, your title is what do you do with library older than 3 years? How do you give it a better life? Well, the sweet spot in SVOD only begins at 3 years. It's usually 3 to 10-year-old films that these SVODs want to buy. And what we're finding is some distributors are then selling to SVODs or partnering with them as part of theatrical. They'll have a new film in theatrical and then an older one from their catalog in the VOD, either TVOD or SVOD, it depends on the country. So in a way, creating a crossover between the new and the old, the director, the earlier film, the later film, bringing some sort of curated logic like your box set thing in the DVD days. And in certain countries, we're seeing binge viewing in cinemas, like where they're trying to copy the VOD audience pattern. So instead of having the same film running at 12, 2, 4, and 6 p.m., you know, they'll have 2 Bernard Tati movies in a row and have a binge view with a coffee and a wine in between, you know, creating little events for that audience. Once they've walked into the cinema, what else can you sell them and can you discount or bundle as an exhibitor? And that's in certain countries like Canada. So I thought that would just, I mean, I see great hope for the art house older films. I accept that in some countries it's tricky if you don't have a buyer in your country, but I would urge you to look if there are buyers outside the country that are trying to pick up Italian rights. There are now several who are trying to do art house cinema SVODs for 3 or 5 euros a month to a consumer. They only buy library. Some of them buy classics. We're doing deals for films that are 30 and 40 years old. but of course they're cheaper, and but they're trying to counter program against the mainstream, the Sky, the premium mainstream type of buyer, or a Netflix. Amazon, you know, is already looking at buying Landmark Cinemas, so they're moving backwards. And I think you'll find, if you make the older films available in a way, using perhaps social media, we talked about this as well, reaching the audiences who are interested in the theme. They don't necessarily know your website, but if it's a theme like Occupy Wall Street or Refugee or, you know, marital dysfunction, using social media to capture people who are interested in that theme and then engaging with them with articles or topics and then bringing them to the cinema for an event. Those are some of the new patterns we're seeing where VOD and cinema work together. So I guess I wanted to distinguish between the mainstream types and then the genre-specific, the telecom and cable operators, who in some countries partner up for art house and local films, and in other cases they avoid them and never buy them. So it's very specific for the people in the room. But in a way, the best marriage, which we're leading to, is the cinema and VOD crossovers, the windows.
Hot topic.
It's a hot topic, I know. I was trying to think if there was another one. Oh, there was one comment from someone in the room, or you, my last comment here. One option was that you were saying maybe we as distributors have to build our own platform, right? That was your word, and I understand that logic. I think a number of people have tried that, and sometimes it works very well, but a lot of times it doesn't, because of the incredible costs of the tech, but also the marketing and creating a brand that didn't exist before. What I have found that is working is more humble and more lateral, if you want to call it, a lateral move, which is where you build your own platform on someone else's platform that already exists and has traffic. So, for example, we call it, if it was television, you'd call it a branded block, like the Disney branded block from 6 to 9 p.m. Well, having whatever your cinema name, the Pathé block, on SVOD and AdVOD channels that already exist, and TVOD, means it's their tech, their responsibility, their headaches, their finance. They need your brand for the curation, because the biggest problem that consumers have today is they don't necessarily know where to go to find the movies they want. But if they're already going to iTunes, which is a bad example, or to Sky, then have a branded block on Sky that is the art house corner, and it's curated by blah, 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 you know. And that's what Walter Presents, for example, is doing. Channel 4 in the UK is doing, they're only buying foreign language films that are not from the UK, but it's curated by Walter, and it's a VOD platform, and people go because they want to see that type of film, even though they don't know the title or the name of the distributor. Yeah. So this sort of concept can work.
The problem is sometimes to make aware the audience that they want this kind of title, because they no longer know that they want what is art house, and they want art house. Then maybe they realize that they want it, but they don't know. So, well, that's a cultural problem.
It's a cultural problem, and I think VOD, the VOD world that I work in mostly, we avoid labels, you'll be shocked, avoid labels like documentary. We do topic, You know, so if it's a refugee film, there'll be a doc, there'll be a feature, there'll be a short, there'll be a series all around refugees. And the audience is interested in refugees, so they're going to go to that topic. They don't necessarily, other than the art house and documentary audience preaching to the converted, the people you already know are art house lovers, there's a whole world of my, you know, teenage son's era where those labels can backfire, but they still love the movies when they're exposed to them. But they have to be about the topic that they're interested in, and a lot of millennials are extremely interested in the topics that are in art house films. But if they wear that label, if you want to broaden beyond a niche audience, sometimes you have to lure them in by the topic rather than the label. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I'm talking too fast.
No,
yeah.
No,
go ahead, jump in. We should. Yeah.
Actually, William, maybe you want to interact on that, no? Because when we were talking yesterday, we mentioned also Peccadillo, etc. So. Mm.
Yeah. Thank you, firstly, for having me here. Unlike Michael, I managed to escape the UK, so very pleased to be here, you know, and someone else as well. And I think there's someone from Curzon in the audience. There's a few of us. I couldn't agree more with pretty much everything Wendy just said, actually. I think, well, first and foremost, people say, oh, DVD sales have collapsed, but VOD's not picking up. This is going to surprise you to hear this because, you know, you see how big Netflix is and Amazon is, but VOD is still very much in its infancy. I think it's going to take a while before we see the full... the full fruits of the revenue, so to speak. But I do think Wendy's touched upon a number of really interesting and very important points there. What we're seeing is an interest in and curated SVOD services, a la movie style. We did some research in the UK, and what we found was, and it's quite counterproductive to what you think, counterintuitive, that people don't want to pay a subscription and have 1,000 films to see because they get bewildered by the choice. But if you provide them with a curated service that selects 30 or 40 films on a rotational basis that provides that, you know, this is the Walter Present style, you know, this is really good film in your niche, works quite well. So we are exploring with two or three partners, distributors we've worked with for a long time, we have good relations, actually launching a platform for their content. So LGBT is a good example. We have a lot of content on my platform. That's one app. That's one thing that does sell quite well. So we are talking to one distributor to basically provide the infrastructure for them to market their content online. What you probably don't realize is it's ridiculously expensive to set up a platform and to market, as Wendy quite rightly pointed out. So if we can at least provide the technicals and some content and some marketing, and then the distributor will really push their content to their niche audience, we think it's going to work quite well, and we're quite excited to see how that does next year. So I'm kind of here wearing two hats. I'm co-founder of FilmDo, which is an international film platform. We also, like Wendy, I actually have issues with the word art house, so I try to avoid using that word because I think it pigeonholes content in a way that, you know, my family, one half of my family is quintessentially English, and if I say the word art house, they get very scared and not interested in seeing the content. And I don't think that's healthy. I have issues with the connotations of the word, and I think what matters is, as Wendy quite rightly points out, what is the theme? What is the film about? What is the topic? Who is the audience? And I always say to filmmakers when they're at the start of the process, like, who are you writing this film for? You know, what topics is it dealing with? Who are you going to market it to? And it's the thematic concept which is going to be how people will find the films. So that's what FilmDo is doing. So we're trying to focus more on themes and particular niches. when it comes to Eurovod, which I'll quickly just talk about, Eurovod is has been reborn. It was a different kind of association. We're now representing 16 platforms and technology companies. And what we're trying to do is to share knowledge, to share know-how, to share training, and say, okay, is this this has worked in France, and has this worked in the Netherlands? And trying to pull our expertise and work together to raise awareness of different schemes and initiatives. And I think that's why it's important that Europa Distribution is holding this panel, because I think VOD platforms need to work more closely with distributors to program, to curate, and to promote the kind of content that their audience thinks they would like. And I think it's a partnership, it's a collaborative partnership. Just one last thing to say. I think blended models could work in the future. I do think having a TVOD or SVOD blend is quite interesting. And what we're seeing, and it's early days, we're seeing in Asia, AVOD is actually, funnily enough, platforms being supported by telcos are actually doing quite well. But that is off the back of significant telco support. So a good example of this is iFlix. Now, raise of hands. Who here has heard of iFlix? Raise your hand. Okay, iFlix. No? Okay. You will soon. Seriously, you will. They operate now in about 40 countries, and they have massive amounts of capital. They're part-funded by Sky. They're one of the biggest VOD platforms in Asia and the Middle East. It's just a matter of time before they get here. They have actually been very successfully supported by telcos. So Syntel, Telkomsel, they're essentially funding them. And I think the future in Europe, we're going to see some SVOD platforms being supported by telcos, and you're going to see this blended model occurring. So it's very interesting. It's exciting times, but there's going to be a lot of change. So I think distributors and VOD platforms need to experiment. We need to look at how we can be innovative and how we can do things differently. So, thank you.
And actually, today, because I wanted to know a little bit more about FilmDo, you know, so the philosophy of the platform, the kind of content you have, you mentioned that it's working internationally, so are you dealing with it? Because, of course, that means, I guess, that you have to pick the rights in different countries. Or you manage that, and also, of course, probably one of the most important things is that working on this different niche, or you attract these different audiences. What is more like the marketing strategies that you are building with partners, or sometimes maybe also as a platform?
When we first started out, we originally started out as just the UK and Ireland, and then we found that a lot of our traffic was coming from abroad. So we rather, perhaps naively, thought that we could market internationally. The reality is, as Wendy quite rightly pointed out, you need a lot of money to do marketing. You really have to put a lot of money in. Yeah, and you know, it's been difficult. Now, so what we've done is we've doubled down on particularly LGBT content, where we've got a really good library and, you know, we're quite well known. We want to do more, like we want to promote French cinema, we want to promote Asian films, because we founders love Asian films. But it has been quite difficult. The way that we have done it, and I don't know if it's worked, we're still assessing, is to do by themes, as Wendy pointed out, or to do by language. And what we found is, because we have probably one of the most diverse language collections, you know, we have a lot of French films, a lot of Spanish films, a lot of Japanese films, we found a lot of people are coming to our site to watch films because of the language, and that's because they're learning languages. You know, but the difficulty for us has been, how do you manage, so we had to build this, how do you manage content where you have to geo-lock it across multiple jurisdictions? From a contract rights management point of view, it can be a bit of a logistical nightmare. So I think there's a lot to be said for example, mymovies.it. I don't think I'm surprising anyone here when I say they're moving into showing films online, doing VOD. But that's because they really know their market. They have 10 to 15 million visitors a month in their geography. So they have the traffic to be able to market in that geography. But when you go international, you need massive amounts of money to market. So, or you need to create some great viral videos and see if that works. But, you know, it's a really difficult challenge because platforms, we have to develop the tech, we have to manage the tech, and then we have to do the marketing and content acquisition, and it's tough. So, I don't know if I answered your question there, Christine, but it's a tough one.
Can you maybe explain on which country you are operating already?
Well, technically, we're also a database. So it makes us a bit complicated, but our biggest market is the US, followed by the UK. So English language. But ironically, and it's funny, I was talking to someone from Arte about this. Guess which country in Asia, and it's not China, both us and Arte get a lot of traffic from. Does anyone want to hazard a guess? Vietnam? Close, but no. Anyone else? That's tiny. But geographically, you're on the spot. Indonesia. Yeah? Indonesia is what? Hundreds of millions of people. I was amazed. I was talking to Arte. We were just having a beer from someone from Arte. And our second biggest traffic is from Indonesia. We get about 2,000 people a day from Indonesia coming to our website. Right? That's a fair amount. But the problem is, they don't buy. Why don't they buy? Because we're selling a film for €3 or €4. Yeah? And what's the price point for iFlix in Indonesia? Probably €3 or €4, per month. Yeah. Right? So they're not going to pay €3 or €4 for my film because it doesn't make any sense. So this is the issue when you deal with international markets. You need to know, you know, what works in Italy or UK won't necessarily work in Indonesia. So that also creates pricing challenges, and then that has an impact on how you sell your film. So it's really interesting to see the geographical differences and cultural differences. And actually, the other thing, just very quickly, in Germany, TVOD seems to be doing reasonably well, whereas in other markets, TVOD isn't doing as well. So there's also differences in terms of what the consumers, how they're prepared to pay, what they're prepared to pay, and when they want to pay.
Some question, maybe, from the audience or from the speakers? Ethan?
Thank you. I'm Alison Gardner from Scotland, part of the UK, just. After Brexit, we'll be independent. So,
yeah. Can I come join you, please?
I represent Cinefile, but I also represent Glasgow Film Festival and Glasgow Film Theatre. So Glasgow Film Theatre partnered up with MUBI. So what was really interesting is what you're saying is exhibitors also being part of that.
Absolutely.
Huge marketing drive. So we partnered up with MUBI so that when you buy a loyalty card for the cinema, you get a year's free MUBI. And what that does is we've noticed is it's increased their cinema going quite significantly because we're able to track it. Because essentially what we're all doing is giving people great movies to watch, whether it's the theatrical experience, whether it's the video on demand home experience, because you've got to take all of that into account, that people consume films in a variety of different ways. While the cinema is really important for us, obviously, because it's our bread and butter, partnering up with MUBI has been a huge, I would say, a big project for us that's helped us look at patterns of how people consume their films. And also, that means it's great for me because I'm also learning as a distributor what people will then watch both in the cinema and when I buy films as well. So I think that sort of circle using exhibitors is really important. It's something that we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I think you've raised a really good point there. Is Barbara here from Curzon?
She is.
Hey, how you doing? You're right.
Hi, Barbara.
I couldn't see you in the audience. Yeah, I mean, Curzon, I think Barbara's probably got a good point to add here with what Curzon are doing, which I think is really interesting.
So I work for Curzon Artificial Eye, which is the distribution arm of Curzon in the UK. We have cinemas, Curzon Cinemas. We have a distribution company, which is Curzon Artificial Eye. So we distribute mainly world cinema titles. And then we have our own platform, which is Curzon Home Cinema. And that is a TVOD platform, but we do mainly premium VOD. So it's day and date with theatrical. It works well for us, so yeah. We think we're going to keep doing it. We used to do some with Allison before as well. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a different model that we have.
And you also started a subscription thing, a club, right?
Yes, we have Curzon 12, which is a subscription for Curzon members. So
yeah,
you get...
Isn't it free? It's free, isn't it? For
It is.
If you're a Curzon member, yeah. You get it for free,
yeah.
which is also really interesting concept. So what they're saying is... look, you know, you're a Curzon member, you come to our cinemas, oh, by the way, you should start seeing films online,
yeah.
And the 12 is a way in which they're kind of gently nudging people to experience what they have online. So, hey, I enjoyed that film, oh, I'm going to buy that one because it's advertised. And I think Curzon are being pretty experimental, and I really like that about them. So, but I think my colleagues here know a lot more about cinema and VOD working together.
Yes, I'm sorry, is that good for you? No, we exactly do the same thing that Curzon does, but in more in all cinemas, meaning that it is a surprise that today the audience don't know what is beauty and where is it. So, but most of the people know their cinema around the corner, so point is just to make the link. When you think cinemas, when you think film, you think to your cinemas. So you have this offer where your cinemas offer you a VOD platform. So every time you watch a movie, which is VOD or in theater, you are at the same place. So about the audience, they're always around their cinemas and consuming in their cinemas area. That's what is very important for us. We start platforms 1 year ago with 5 cinemas, very strong branded cinemas with loyal audience. Now we have 40 cinemas all around France. And in fact, we have a global platform, but each cinema has its own page on the platform. And we curated each page according to the curation of the cinemas, meaning if it's a cinema... showing art house films, all the page will be art house films. If it's more blockbuster, it will be blockbuster. So when you are an audience from the theater, you find exactly the same kind of movies. At some point, you have the library when you can see what you want. But it's very important for us to connect these two audiences, VOD and theaters. And for examples, We have 40 cinemas, which is represent 5 million admissions a year. All the people are not going every day to cinema, so it represents 1.5 million of people, which is a huge audience going to the theaters. So this audience can be captured to go to VOD, which is, as we said, an infancy market. But I think we should cap the audience that are already going to the cinema, interest in cinemas. And about the curation and the theme, we are working on two different levels. The first one is we take the film, the new releases, and at this moment we present the film, the older film of the director, meaning for Alabama Monroe, when the new movie of Max Groningen was on the theater, we propose Alabama Monroe and some more film. It's at exactly the good time to offer this kind of film, because even me, when I see the new release, I'm just saying, oh, I forgot to watch the older movie, so what was there? Or when it's a new director that I discover, it's just, oh, I want to see the older film. So it's really a moment you can put your catalog and push your catalog on the platform, and it's working very well. And we are doing exactly the same thing with thematics. So, for example, in October, we will have The First Man, the big movie about space, Odyssey, blah, blah. And we work on the thematics, meaning we have a documentary film about Apollo and space expedition and fiction films about this kind of adventure films and so forth. So you have a package. So you want to see films about Apollo and space adventure discovery. You have all, everything here. Well, I think it's not... You don't need to have 10 movies because it's too much. You are not working, looking at 10 movies about the same theme, but 5-3 is good. But it's really this balance between cast, director, and thematics that you have to find and to reach the good audience at the good time. That's exactly what we try to do with the audience of the theatres, because they are obviously already interested in cinemas and films and everything. So.
And you were just saying that so per thematic you would have 3 to 5 titles that complement what is in
more.
The theatre?
Yeah,
not but then, how is it? Because I guess that's, of course, you have films that are released every week, so you have several thematics at the same time.
Yeah.
So how many do you have? Generally, for how long do you have the titles? Well, like,
it depends, because some months we have a few released, so it's okay. But in October, we have more than 10 thematics, so it's a bit complicated to push them. But we are counting on our theatres to work on them, because we have very art house thematics, so the theatre we have in art house will push this film, and the big one like First Man, it would be the more. So we try to balance the communication between everybody, but it's always a bit difficult to have them 10 themes in the same month. But anyway, we need to have content, because we are young, we have to show that you can find movies on our platform, and we are not a niche with 10 films and that's it. So it's important to show that there is something to eat, if I can say so. So yeah, it's a lot of work for kind of October, November, December, but at some point it's a good energy.
So that means that actually it could be possible that the film that is in the cinema wouldn't be in the cinema anymore, while actually you are still having the team of maybe the package around the same
author. I'm sorry, I don't understand the beginning. It's possible that what?
So you have what you have on the VOD platform that is linked to the cinema are films that make sense with a film that is at this time exploited in the cinema, isn't it?
Exactly.
So it may be you were... Mentioning Felix van Groningen, mm-hmm. So you could have, I don't know, Steven Skye and Elias en der Dinge, etc.,
yeah.
When the new film is released. But then, because it's cinema, you have no certainty of the time the film will stay in the cinema. So my question was that, you actually, you are more stable in the time,
yeah.
Maybe, with your title than
the cinema? We are, in fact, we're really working very close with our theatres. We are speaking to them every week, and so we are very aware of what is happening. Sometimes when the film is not anymore released on theaters, we keep it 2 weeks, and then it goes off. But it's always on the library. So it's not on the front page, but it's on the library. And most of the time we keep it... 4 weeks on the front page, and then it goes to the library, and maybe on the front page of another theater. So it's always moving. But the base is in 1 month.
So you were mentioning, sorry, I'm keeping coming back, but so you have the films on the front page when the team is very like active, but then you have
actually
a library. So that means that actually this VOD platform is feeding itself with
exactly.
The different thematics that are coming
exactly.
In a new film. So it's growing with the releases.
Exactly.
But it's not de-growing, which is
no.
A new word I just invented.
No. We keep the movies. At the beginning, in fact, we start with a proposal, which is where 10 movies a month, and then it's out. And in fact, it's not enough, because we don't have enough movie to keep our clients.
Mm-mm.
They need to have quite an offer. If you are less than 200, 300, maybe 5, it's very difficult to keep your audience. So we are building our library this way, and now we are a little more than 200, sorry. And we are going keep going to attend this point where you are enough movies to leave. Otherwise, it's not enough.
And
yeah, there is a question.
Yes, I wanted to ask you. So this is your own platform.
Yeah.
From technical point of view, everything you do, okay. And about revenue sharing, are the cinemas involved in that? Do they have any interest?
Exactly. We are, in fact, we are doing everything. The technical. We are doing the curation. We are really speaking of with our theaters to do it, but we are doing it because the VOD rights are very a nightmare. We are providing communication tools and flyers, trailer, and blah, blah, blah. But the cinemas get a part of the transaction. That's the point, because we are working really with their audience. We are not having a new platform and trying to find an audience somewhere. The audience is already there. It's the one from the cinemas, so they're having a share.
And but so it's quite costly, because every film you have to encode it and do all that work.
It is
for sometimes And so is it already profitable or
no? Let's be honest.
I'm not surprised.
No, it's not. No. We really start 1 year ago, so we are very young. We will have anyway 100 cinemas at the end of the year, so it's be a little more easier, but we will need to have almost 200 cinemas to be profitable.
And then all the films are at least 36 months old, according to the...
It's 4 months. We're on TVOD, theatrical release.
So you can still have newer films.
That's why we are TVOD, because otherwise you have really... catalogue films, and you have, I'm really sorry, but you have to have some fresh things to show, so you have your audience, and then you can have catalogue, but only catalogue is difficult.
And the distributors usually, you said it was hard to get the rights, but I mean, do they...
No, it's not hard. It's not hard to have the word rights. It's just some time to know where they are, because catalogue films sometimes is just... You don't know, everything disappeared. But we have a very good relation with distributors. We didn't have any problems to have the catalog. So, that's very going well on that.
Yeah. That's good. Thanks.
Anke, so you are doing more or less the same in the Netherlands, but not totally the same, because you are doing more like what Curzon is also doing with premium VOD and day-and-date, always with exhibitors, etc. So please.
We started out about 2 years ago, started out with 14 cinemas, and now 20 of the biggest Dutch art house cinemas are participating. And we are really collaborating with them in showing day and date films. So when they're in their screening rooms, they're on Pickle as well. And we leave them on there for at least 4 months. So there's no gap between the first run and the second window. And it's a premium price. It's 8.50 for a film, which is more or less an average of a cinema ticket in the Netherlands. So it really is like an extra screening room for cinemas. So there's also a rev share
with the cinemas.
And the reason that we wanted to really work with cinemas, because we, of course, know to get a platform out there, to build it, is quite a lot of money. But to really attract an audience will cost so much money. We would need a so big a budget. It wouldn't work. So we wanted to partner up with actually the most trusted art house professionals out there, the cinemas. People go to the local cinema because they trust their programming, and we wanted to extend that online. So they're really partnering up now with us. So they have, once a film is screening in a screening room, if you, for example, buy an online ticket, they have two buttons, says watch the film, buy a ticket for our cinema, or watch it on Pickle.
Yeah.
And because it's their own, they're entrepreneuring in it, they're actually selling it as well. And
well,
we have a trailer that is screening in all their screening rooms in front of the films, and we could have a look if the technicians are ready. Sorry, you can also watch it at home. And I think one of the most interesting things about the collaboration is also the gathering of data. Cinemas are gathering a huge amount of data about their visitors. We are gathering a lot of data. And it is so interesting to combine that and connect that in a way. If people see a film in a cinema, we can reach out to them saying, "You should like this film, there's more on Pickle." Because what Josephine just said, connecting older films to newer films, that's what we are doing as well. So the new Asghar Farhadi is coming out in actually 1 week, or October 4th in the Netherlands. And so we are having his older films on the platform as well. And because cinemas are actually promoting the new film, they can now really easily tell their audiences, hey, if you like this, he's made some other really terrific films. Go watch that at our online screening room. So I think this is actually going well. We're doing quite interesting numbers as well. I mean, people are actually watching, and this is increasing very rapidly. So we're happy.
Can I ask a question to you? I'm curious whether the demographic of the Pickle Online is younger than, for example, a 50-plus art house moviegoer.
Yeah.
Have you found that, or it's too early to say?
No, not at all, no. Yes, we can see that it's younger. I mean, the average film goer of art cinemas in the Netherlands is about 50, 55-plus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you see, one of our largest group is the 35 to 45. Actually, that is one of the reasons that we originally started Pickle, because we saw like cinema going like a camel. People go when they're young, then they get kids and busy jobs, and they just can't make it to the cinema. And once they're old again, there's mm-hmm. time and yeah. money usually to go to, yeah. to cinemas. And we wanted to reach that specific group that doesn't have time to go as
or
much as
they live
like
somewhere.
To.
They live in a region, maybe,
exactly.
not in town.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's what we see, that is the group that's actually using
Yeah, it goes to my point as well, like before, about reaching new audiences rather than just the traditional art house, which I am one of. I'm an art house devotee, but to get the wider audiences in, they may be viewing in a different way. With millennials, they often want the exact same films. It's a myth to think they don't like art house. They do. What they don't like is a scheduled viewing time. So if something, you know, so often they don't want to make a commitment for a scheduled viewing time, but they will happily watch it at their own time. And that was a shocker from a lot of the VOD platforms we worked for with the data. And once you know that, and you're a distributor with the rights, you can, use that to your advantage. Yeah.
Can I just quickly add one in that? I think Wendy's has touched upon probably one of the most significant things that we're now seeing, which is data, right? We've now got more access to data than we ever had before, so you're able to understand your audience from both a programming, from a curation, from a content acquisition point of view in a way that you certainly couldn't 20 or 30 years ago. So I think it's so crucial that the data point is so important to understand what will work, what might not work, what to program, but also what to experiment with, what risks to take, how to try and do something a little bit different. So I think that's quite exciting, I think.
Actually, so that's a question for Anke and Josephine. It said on the data, so I guess that you are gathering a lot from the beginning. So are there already trends like actually this one, that you have younger people on the VOD, but there are, have you noticed other trends? Maybe that's less data, but already like with the relationship you have built with theatres, or that has evolved from the early beginning when I guess that you had more to convince some to get in, and now it is working. Pardon, sorry for that. Is it working by itself? So the evolution a little bit from the beginning to now, and what you have that you can maybe share and give an insight of how it's working?
Sorry, I didn't really... Do you mean on the data side, just or how the cinemas started participating and... Okay. why they started participating is probably... I have my partner Noortje sitting right over there, and we're both coming from within the industry. We have been part of exhibitors for a long time, worked at film festivals. We are also have a different company called Harry, and is also distributing in a small scale. And like probably any market, the cinemas are overflowing with films. It's from the big films to event screenings, and it's very hard to really get a good place at cinemas, a good slots at cinemas for more weeks in a row, or a daily screening, or not on the slots that just are not that interested. So we figured there's a lot of money, energy put in these releases of those films. We need to reach out to a broader audience and also give cinemas some space and some possibility to screen those films that they do love but don't have space for. So we started out as a pilot with one film that we released ourselves just to see how it would work. I mean, are people actually doing this? Are cinemas waiting for this? And that was a huge success. We did a really big survey on cinema goers. Is this something that you are actually waiting for? I mean, or is that just an idea in our heads? And yeah, it was, because people say, I do want to see more films, but I don't have a lot of time. And if I do find the time, it's in slots I can't make it on 5 o'clock, for example, or it's already gone by the time I have found my friend who will go with me. And so then we started out the year after with 14 cinemas, and we're now at 20. And we just did a survey amongst our current users, and actually the biggest reasons that they don't are going are still the same. I mean, one is just I don't have a lot of time, and it's not in times that I can find a place in my agenda to actually go to the cinemas. And one just funny thing that we found out is that people are actually, a film is available for 48 hours at our platform, and there was quite a lot of people who said that was too little of time. They wanted to have more time. So people are actually probably getting used to, I don't know, watching series on Netflix, but they are watching a film in bits of pieces whenever they can find time, because time is the biggest thing for even for cinema goers, but even for watching on a platform that prevents him from doing so.
Yeah,
the schedule.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. And Josephine?
For the moment, it's a bit too early to have strong data, but we are really working to compare our data to the data of theaters, meaning compare box office and VOD. Well, it's not a surprise that when a movie is working on theater, it's working on VOD, and it's when it not working in theater, it's not working on VOD. There is no such a thing that I will wait for the movie in VOD because it's cheaper. No, it doesn't exist. If it doesn't attract public in the theater, it's not attract public in VOD, that's for sure. The only thing what's funny, but it's very specific to France maybe, that a lot of people told me that we won't succeed because we are accessible from the website of the theaters. Not only, but mostly. And we do have this big website in France called Allociné, where you have all the theaters, time and so forth. And everybody told me that you won't succeed because you need to be on Allociné, or the people are not going on the theater website.
True.
And in fact, it's not true. It's true in Paris, but not in the region. So, in fact, 70% of our audience are really coming from the theater website. They do have a loyal audience that following their work already online, and we are working a lot on social media with theaters, so they are making posts and publicity for us on their Facebook pages, and they do have a lot of subscribers on digital
Didn't you say you were working with telecoms also, like Orange?
Yes.
Yeah, and that there's a collaboration in a way.
Well, we are not working directly with them for the moment, but we are discussing. Are you talking about VOD Fest?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, just to say that in France we do have an union, a VOD union, we like this kind of things, and an association for the promotion of VOD, so to make people understand what is VOD, where is it, and to, well, a bit move and animate the market. So mid of October we have a VOD Fest, meaning that we are 11 platforms all together, and all the four days all the movie are on €2 and €5 when it's EST, and it's national communication. So we are Orange platform, TF1, and all the big players and the smaller, and we have a bunch of unbelievable national communication just to make understand people VOD exists and it's useful, and you can have it of there, and we are all together to do that. And I think it's very important not to fight each against each other, but to be all together to make this market growing. Yeah.
Me first. My question is to you about Pickle. Do you have what is the percentage of compared to film attendance, how many tickets are bought on the Pickle as compared to what the theater sells? Box office, because you choose your theater when you go on your website, so the revenue goes, it's like a cinema ticket, right? So what's the percentage?
What we see now is that compared to what a film is doing in cinemas, it's about like 2 to 10% of what it's doing in cinemas is also watching at home.
2 to 10%, okay.
Yep.
And is it growing or...?
It's actually growing quite rapidly. We about to end twice, double as the amount of views that we did last year. Yep.
Is this increase at the expense of the other revenues,
or of the cinemas?
No. So
no,
it's
and the
new...
cinemas would agree finally with this. Yeah.
So
actually,
it's new.
Cinemas have grown also in admissions. It's hard to say, but it's they haven't lost any visitor.
Okay. Oh, so basically, you are increasing the audience for the film. You are increasing the total.
The audience in general.
That's
more you can cross platforms, crossing over platforms, basically looking at your audience as a viewer,
yes,
like the other woman said, regardless of what platform they're on, increases overall the pot. There may be the odd exception.
Our research also show that these are people that otherwise wouldn't have gone for several reasons.
Of course, that's my point. I mean, I'm totally in favor, you know. My films are on your platform, so.
I'm Alessandro Giacobbe from Academy 2 in Italy, distributor, but in principle, the question was the very same. I have quite a beginner as distributor since 6 years only, but I have been running cinemas for the last 40 years. So the crucial question was, did exhibitors see any incentive in such a cooperation? Because we are trying to develop something similar in Italy, which is not existing at the moment. But the difficulties we are facing are, in fact, how to convince exhibitors that this is going to be something profitable for them. So in a way, we have to show them that there is really a benefit, and that we are not going to steal their audience from the screens. But what is very important, in my opinion, is that in Italy, especially, the market of the theatrical market is very fragmentized, and we have a lot of very small cinemas all around where art house movies are not visible at all, because small exhibitors who have to survive, they are compelled to program mainly blockbusters, and they are, in a way, under blackmail from the big majors just to program blockbusters. So I think what could be very interesting from their side is to convince them that they will have an extra virtual screen where they could finally program what they would love to program and not what they are compelled to program. So on this basis, I think we should work together with all the small independent distributions, so to build up a network of small cinemas with very few screens who will finally be able to have an alternative programmation, so to have art house more visible. But we have to show them there is some money in it, because otherwise the costs might be maybe very high, and not at the end the revenues can be very small. Probably we have to consider this as an investment for the future as well. Maybe they should accept they will not see money right away, but it's a way to survive. In a way, I think what is happening now is for exhibitors, they should not miss the chance to be involved. As it happened in the 80s with the home video. I mean, at that time, I think exhibitors lost the chance to jump on the train of the home video revenues, just leaving video shops to do the job, why cinemas should have done it at that time. And I think the same may happen today if we don't involve exhibitors to join the new project of VOD and cinemas together. You may have heard about the recent fuss we had in Italy with the Netflix On My Skin being programmed.
Yeah, we discussed it yesterday.
Yes.
So the
main mistake, in my opinion, which has been done, was not to involve exhibitors in this. So they should have proposed a revenue for exhibitors joining this project. And these, I mean, all the problems we have, all the polemics we had in Italy may have been kept down, because they simply imposed these to exhibitors without offering them to
they
be
were
part.
Not, they were not part of the
business.
I completely agree. It was exactly what we said yesterday.
So I think talking about the future of the possible VOD platforms in Italy, I think we should try to build up together with independent distributors something which anyhow has to be has to have exhibitors on board. So this, I hope, is my wish. I'm already talking about this with some people in Italy since a while. It's hard to convince everybody, but we'll see. But I mean, the question was, as before Thomas was asking, do exhibitors already see some profit on that?
Yes, in our case, definitely. They're actually making money. And also, in the Netherlands, they also invest. I mean, they have to, they are a part of it with money as well. I mean, they have to pay a monthly fee to be part of the system. And This was kind of a struggle in the beginning. Is that something that we will offer for free, or is it something that... And we wanted to really have them as partners, meaning everybody's investing as well, and now they're even getting their money back and also earning above that. And that really helps. I mean, that, of course, turned the opinion, seeing when cinemas were seeing that it was really working. And I would like to comment on one thing else that you said about have an alternative program for arthouse cinemas. I would advise you to also have actually films that are screening in cinemas or have been screened in cinemas as well, because if their audience are used to more blockbuster type kind of films, it's really hard to get them to see the arthouse films. It's working, because these are people that are actually watching those films in cinema and have the online venue as an alternative instead of something totally different.
If I may say something also, I believe you will agree that these kind of initiatives, both France and what you're doing in the Netherlands, works with independent cinemas. But you have a strong opposition from multiplexes, usually, right? They won't work in that system. So it's very a dual approach to the market. And why? It's because it's the whole idea of curating, indeed, you know, as opposed to multiplexes, who will take any film for 2-3 weeks and then bye-bye, as opposed to those cinemas, which we are mostly interested in, which are indeed picking the films and doing curating work. So I'm really curious to see how eventually are we going to have really two systems living next to another. Because what happens is that when you have a crossover film, mm-hmm. that can play in a larger multiplex and also in an art house, they will oppose it. Of course, they will say, then your film is not going to play in Pathé or Kinépolis or UGC. And so that's the problem. And I think that's a big break. I mean, this really prevents this to go further, I'm afraid.
Probably Barbara's probably going to kill me. But Barbara, can you possibly add your views on that? Because, I mean, Curzon's online presence is fairly... You've been going a while now, and I know it's pretty integrated, so I don't... Yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add to that, because I think it would provide a valuable difference
what
we've potentially heard here.
We generally follow the model of releasing day and date, and so we don't book the films into multiplexes, because they don't let us do it. So that's what we do. And that's the choice we have to make.
But because Curzon has artificial eye, so it's vertically integrated. So I think
we have our own cinemas.
And exactly, they have their own cinemas. They have their own distributor. So it actually, I think it works quite well, quite interesting. And I think there's a potential for that to potentially be done in other countries, or the approach that my colleagues are using here, which I think is also fantastic. So.
I'd like to comment a little bit on the crossovers, because that is an issue, especially for day and date. I mean, if it's screened in multiplex, we can't obviously offer it day and date. But we can, however, in the second window, so right after about 4 months when it hits a TVOD, we can. And we see it is a really big difference, because people don't really think about new films or what they're a little bit older. I mean, they just want to see a new film, and for crossovers this time can be longer. People still know this kind of title, whereas for arthouse films people know about it around the theatrical release and not really long after. So day and date is crucial for arthouse, because then that is the moment there's attention that we can catch the audience. For crossovers, if we offer them a little later, what we do is, I mean,
30
that's
days.
Not a problem.
Okay, I'm just seeing how long we still have, because we are already across the timing. So 5 minutes? Okay. So maybe if there is a last question and then we are summing it up. Wendy, I think you wanted to say something.
Just one comment from other regions. The concept of there's day and date and then there's not. But in other regions, there's the option of the 30-day theatrical window for art house, doc, etc. films, where it's in the cinemas first, well, just in a way like what Amazon does, and then it can go to other windows after.
including SVOD, and some flexibility, depending on the nature of the film, whether art house or doc, may open up a lot more windows. Otherwise, it's dark in the theatrical period. And I find in Europe, there's much more of a black and white, like day and date, not day and date, conflict. But there's a lot of room for flex, certainly in Australia, North America, Asia, where the windows can be played with when you share in the revenue of the next window. Not to give up the theatrical, but to take a piece crossover of each other's revenue. All of a sudden, the rights issues melt away. Just a thought.
And actually, I think that that you have a project in Norway that is doing more or less this, no? So that's a project, same kind of project that La Toile from Josephine and Pickle from Anker, Webkino, that's the name? I always forget. Netkino. Mm-hmm. That is also doing this catch-up you were saying, perform. But what is interesting, so because now we will have to sum up, because I've asked Josie already like five times. So now we are finishing this panel. So... What I find very interesting is that from the input we had for the different speakers is to see that, yeah, certainly this period is not the easiest one, but actually there are a lot of things that have been created now. So a lot are still in their infancy, maybe a VOD, independent VOD platform, the collaboration between theaters and VOD platforms to try to actually add up. So you have, it's not 1 + 1 = 2, it's 1 + 1 = more than 2, which is always good. So I find it a very positive point, because of course all the idea to have this workshop here is that we have... I'm distracted. So that we can find a way so that distributors, once the first classic windows have passed, can still on the long term work on their films. So we know that from the feedback we had from several distributors that it can be quite tricky. But what is very positive is that actually, thanks to collaboration, and it's several collaboration, because with you, it's what you have created as an interface, but then it's the exhibitors playing the films, the distributors giving the films. Probably there's also, we didn't talk too much on marketing, so I suggest we do that at a closed session we will have with the members, but it's also, you create marketing around this collaboration so that people know about the films that are in the theatre, outside the theatres. So it's, we can evolve on that, and... I'm also very happy that Eurovot has also an association now, because that means that actually this kind of exchange like we have here, where it's of course a lot about distribution because we are a distributors association, but we want to cross, you know, the sector rules so that we can discuss with everyone. And the fact that we have now like a cousin we can exchange with is, I think, very, very important. So it's really now about understand the partnership that can be created, because also... Of course, the thing is that we distributors operate on a specific country, so it's about also what is developed in your own country and maybe pushing to see things coming out of the ground, so that if you find that what is done in France, in the UK, Italy, or the Netherlands and other examples, you can maybe try to copy-paste and adapt. And anyway, I think now I really have to finish here. We have our colleague Isabella was taking a lot of notes today. So this will finish as an article on our website, and the website that's europadistribution.org. And also we have a partnership with Cine Europa, so the article will be also published on Cine Europa. So in the case you would like to share with colleagues about this panel, you will find some resume, a summary of the discussion on these two websites, OZ and Cine Europa. And of course now I want to thank so much our speakers of today, who did a very, very good job. It was very interesting for me, though I'm sure it was for you, but so a big applause.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.